Okay, so I know you just heard the end of the shir there, so I know you heard a lot about the Sfira. So we're going to talk a little bit about Sfira, but I think from a little bit of a different perspective, and about some things that are, I think, very, very applicable to everyone. So I want to just tell you a story that I think will encapsulate everything we're going to talk about tonight. So there was, anyone ever here ever heard of the Panovich Rav? Right, so the Panovich Rav was the Rosh Yeshiva of Panovich, one of the great yeshivas in Bnei Brak. And the Panovicher used to come to America in the 50s and 60s to raise money here. So he came one time to America, and he was at an event, and he met an individual, a man there, and the man was talking to him. The man told him he's a professor in a university. So today, you find a lot of professors that are frum Jews. But in those days, you did not find any professors that were frum. There was no such thing as a frum Jew who taught in a university. So the Panovich Rav was fascinated. This guy in America, when there was hardly any frum Jews in America, is a frum Jew teaching in universities. He said, I have to ask you, how is it that you remain a frum Jew in America, America was not like today, and teaching university? So the man told him an unbelievable story. He said, many, many years ago, I was a young boy in Europe, and my parents sent me to go to yeshiva in Raden. Anyone know who the Rosh Yeshiva in Raden was? It was the Chafetz Chaim, right? So we all had to go to the Chafetz Chaim's house, and we had to be tested by him. So there was a huge line of boys waiting to get into the house. So I was waiting on the line, and it was hours and hours and hours, and something must have happened. I fell asleep. I was so tired from the travel there, I fell asleep on the couch. I woke up hours later in the middle of the night, and there I was, on the Chafetz Chaim's couch, and there was this warm coat over me. And I hadn't been sitting on the couch before. So I realized the Chafetz Chaim must have found me and carried me to the couch and then took his one winter coat and put it over me and covered me. So I stayed there till the morning. I said thank you to him afterwards and I left. He says, but I never forgot the feeling of that warm coat. No matter what I did, I always remembered how warm the Chafetz Chaim's coat was. He says, you know, sometimes I'm here in America, and there's so many things that can take me away from what I believe in, and so many things that could push me away from being frum, but I can't get that warmth out of my head. That warmth that the Chafetz Chaim's coat had for that night for me, it stayed with me my entire life. So the Panovich Rav used to recount this story all the time to tell people a little bit of warmth, being a friend to somebody, you never know what incredible things it can do. So, you know, the Sfira is really about that. Sfira is about being a friend. It's about learning how to be friends, about making relationships, about making relationships that matter. And I think that's very important to talk about today because of the fact that we live in a world that's changing tremendously with regards to that. Modern technology, right, has changed everything. Let's see. So it used to be just like texting and everything. So now it's Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat. All these things. So Snapchat is all my kids that I teach girls in high school, so they're all on Snapchat. So it was just evaluated at $15 billion when it went IPO, when it started on the stock market. Now it was at $15 billion, one of the biggest openings of a company ever, right? Just this thing of texting and being involved in social media, right? So social media, all these have changed relationships incredibly. But I want to share with you some stats that'll really give us a reason to understand how the Sfira teaches us what it means to have a relationship. So do you think people are happier or less happy with social media? Less happy, right? So it happens to be that they've done a bunch of studies this past year. They tested levels of depression before being on social media and then in the hour after. They zoom up. Blood pressure goes up. Heart rate goes up. When they do questionnaires of how good you're feeling, how happy you are, it's down immensely, right? Unbelievable. Just within the few hours afterwards. There was a study done in 2014, this is a crazy one, that social media was associated, specifically Facebook, with a 31% higher divorce rate. Meaning people on Facebook were found to have a 31% greater likelihood. Why? Because they so were disconnected from this world, right, by what they were doing on social media and forgetting what it means to really have a relationship with someone, right, that it causes that. They found that when young people are on social media and they block someone, right, you can friend someone and then block, when they block someone, the likelihood is they're never going to speak to them again, right? It used to be, you know, when you got in a fight with a friend at school, so whatever, you sat next to them on the bus, So when they block someone, it's over. Right? An unbelievable, a total change. And there was just a study in the past few weeks that came out, an incredible one, where they measured, they've done in the last two decades, measurement of loneliness, how lonely are people, right? The number of people in America that say that they're lonely has tripled in the past two decades, and especially in the past few years. So all this connectedness somehow, and having a million friends, I mean, my kids in school are connected with more people than I ever dreamed of being connected with at that age, right? It's unbelievable. And nonetheless, they're less happy. They're less satisfied. They have less friends, really, and they have less meaning in their life. So what we have to do is we have to figure out, how is it that the Sphira teaches us what the antidote told us is? To figure out how it is we shouldn't be so obsessed with all these different things and lose what it really means to be a friend. So Rabbi Akiva's students, right? Ms. Garfinkel just told you, they died for what reason? Right? It says, Shelo nagu kavod ze baze. So that's what the Gemara says. They weren't nohe kavod ze baze. What does that literally mean? Nohe kavod. They didn't respect one another. So what does that mean? They didn't respect one another. So it happens to be, if you look in the Medrash, Chazal tell us in the Medrash what that means. And we usually think in school it means like they made fun of each other, they weren't nice to each other. So the Medrash says something totally different. The Medrash says that Rabbi Akiva actually told his new students that he had after all his old students died what happened and why the problems happened. And Rabbi Akiva said something amazing. Rabbi Akiva said, what occurred was, is the students, they might have had a relationship and they were in the base Medrash together and they did things together, but they were jealous of one another. And each one wanted to better the other. So what would happen? One guy would know something, but he wouldn't share it with anyone else because he wanted to be the big one. And another guy would know, but they would never really open up and become real friends. Meaning when they met each other, seem like they're friends, they never really made a deep relationship. So the Akiva said to the new students, I don't want you guys to do that. I want you people to be totally open, to be able to spread Torah to everyone, not to hold anything back from everyone, to become real friends. So the Akiva says in the Medrash, that's what destroyed the world. That's what caused the death of the students, that this thing like social media, they didn't deepen their relationships. They were just willing to leave it the way it was, right? And yeah, that's the real meaning of sinas chinam. What does sinas chinam mean? Baseless hatred, right? So what does that mean? It's like, I always have to ask, what does that mean? Baseless hatred. So we all think in school that means you hate someone for no reason. So if you look at all the examples of sinas chinam throughout the Gemara, that's not the common thread. Sinas chinam, you hate someone for a reason, but it's a bad reason. You hate someone because you don't like the way they dress. You hate someone because you think they're weird. You hate someone for all these reasons that have nothing to do. You don't like someone because they're a bad person and they hurt you. That's not sinas chinam. But hating someone for social reasons or whatever else, that's what Chazal called sinas chinam. In fact, the Netziv writes that the way the sinas chinam in the times of the Beis HaMikdash started was that one Jew would see another Jew and they didn't like the way they did a certain halacha, or they didn't think they were strict enough about certain things. So they would say, this guy, He's not anything. He's not really a frum Jew. And that's how the sinas chinam would start. That sounds familiar? Right? So that's the Tziv says, right? That is how everything began. That's what sinas chinam means. Not it's baseless. It means it's for a bad reason. It's a useless way to hate someone, right? So what is a relationship, right? If Rabbi Akiva told us that's not a relationship, what is a relationship? And what's one pasuk in the Torah that tells us how one Jew is supposed to feel about another? Does Rabbi Akiva have anything to do with that pasuk? Huh? What do you say? Rabbi Akiva's klal, right? So the Mishnah, the Talmud Yerushalmi, actually not the Mishnah, the Talmud Yerushalmi, the Israeli Talmud, there's two Gemaras. So in Yeshiva, they all learn what's called the Talmud Bavli, the Babylonian Talmud. And there's also the Talmud Yerushalmi, the Gemara that was written in Eretz Yisrael. So in the Talmud Yerushalmi, there's a discussion, what is the most important rule in Judaism? What is the most important pasuk in the Torah? Very interesting discussion. So there's a number of opinions in Rabbi Akiva's opinion is popular because it's a song, right? Rabbi Akiva says, "V'ahavta l'rayacha kamocha, you shall love your fellow Jew as yourself, zu klal gadol b'Torah." That is the most important klal, the most important rule in the Torah. Isn't it interesting that Rabbi Akiva is the one to say that? Everyone else says other things, right? Maybe Shabbos. Rabbi Akiva says, "V'ahavta l'rayacha kamocha." Why do you think Rabbi Akiva is the one that says that? Because he lost all his students because of the opposite. right? He lost all his students because they didn't practice that. So specifically now, right, that's why Rabbi Akiva, and during the Sefira, we're supposed to be Masakin, that Rabbi Akiva taught people that because he knew that that was the antidote to all the problems. Right? The Sefer HaChinuch says the reason that Rabbi Akiva said that is the greatest klal is because Sefer HaChinuch says most of the mitzvos have to do with respecting somebody else. If you don't respect someone else, you're going to damage their things. If you don't respect someone else, you're going to steal from them. If you don't respect someone else, you're going to just break Shabbos in front of them and not care what they feel. Meaning all the mitzvos are relying upon a concept of one Jew respecting another. So that's what Rabbi Akiva meant, Zu Klal Gadol b'Torah. He understood that as much Torah as his Talmidim knew, if they didn't have that basic idea of having a real love, a relationship for someone, being friends with them, they wouldn't really be able to do anything. And I once asked somebody who was who's worked in therapy for 40 years, when we're already retired, worked in marital therapy and in child therapy. So I asked him, I'm a rabbi in a shul also, so I see a lot of stuff. So I asked him, like, what happened to families? What happened to families that it used to be, you know, there might have been families that were more committed to each other. And like now, I don't know, sometimes I just feel like in our world, like, there's such a like upheaval of the way things are. So he said to me, he watched in his career everything change. He said, there's one thing that changed. So when he started as a young man in therapy in the late 60s, he says people would commit to things, right? You committed to a job, you committed to a place to live, you committed to a career, you committed to a home, and you committed to a person, right? And you committed to a family. And they didn't necessarily expect anything, but they made a commitment. And then what happened? They made the commitment, and then they would work on it, because that's what it means to be committed to something, that you're willing to invest in it. He says, and you watch over the years how that concept changed, until the point today where he says he'll have someone sitting in front of him, and they don't even begin to fathom the concept of committing to something they don't understand. They don't even begin to understand that you would commit to something that's not perfect, or that's not necessarily going to pay off right away, or not necessarily something that makes you feel good all the time, right? So he said the concept of a relationship changed so much that it's not even there anymore, right? And we find in Yiddishkeit that it tells us the exact opposite. The Avos and Hashem are considered to have the greatest relationship, right? The Navi calls Avram, that Hashem says, Avram Ohavi, Avram my beloved. It's a rare term that the Navi uses. And the Rambam writes, why is he called Avram Ohavi? That Avram and HaKadosh Baruch Hu had the greatest love affair in history. That's what the Rambam writes. They were the quintessential example of a loving relationship. So did Avram and HaKadosh Baruch Hu always get along? Not at all. Avram Avinu fights with God perhaps more than anyone else in the Torah, right? Maybe Moshe. But Avram is constantly, he fights with him by stone. And he fights with him when he can't have children. He's constantly fighting with him. And you see him get upset and feel bad. But nonetheless, HaKadosh Baruch Hu calls him Avram Ohavi, Avram my beloved. Why? Because that's what love is, right? That's what it means to have a relationship with someone. It means that you really are open. You say, right? It's not supposed to be just a thing that's like always smooth and everything's easy. It's supposed to be something that can be have conflict and be difficult, right? There was social media tells us what is a relationship. You have the best post, you have a good pithy line that people can read, and like that makes you cool, and that's great, and that's who you want to follow. But really, it's something that's much deeper. I was teaching my Chumash class a few years ago, a boys' Chumash class, and we were learning about Yitzchak and Rivka. So there's a very incredible comment of the Netziv by Yitzchak and Rivka, and I want to tell you how the class reacted. So if you look at the relationship of Avram and Sarah, and of Yaakov and Rachel, and then compare it to Yitzchak and Rivka, it's very different. Avram and Sarah and Yaakov and Rachel, they fight, right? And they disagree. And when Sarah was upset about Ishmael, she said to Avram, get him out of the house. And when Rachel was upset with Yaakov, she told him. So what happened with Yitzchak and Rivka? Yitzchak and Rivka had two sons, right? Esav and Yaakov. So what happened? Who loved Esav? Yitzchak, right? Loved Esav. And then who loved Yaakov? Right, Rivka. So do you ever find in the entire Torah that Rivka ever tells Yitzchak, this kid Esav is no good? Right? Not only do you not find that, what does Rivka do? She goes out of her way not to tell him. And do this whole thing of disguising Yaakov to trick Yitzchak. So isn't it interesting? Sarah, when she had a problem with Ishmael, she went straight to Avram and said, get this kid out of the house. And Rivka doesn't do this. And the Tziv points out, it's unbelievable. The Tziv also points out, you don't find the Yitzchak and Rivka talking a lot. Right? Yaakov and Rachel, they talk. Avram and Sarah, you find them interacting. You have very few psukim describing any kind of, right? And what happens the first time the Netziv points out, Rivka meets Yitzchak, what does she do? First time she sees him. And then she put a veil on. Right? Huh? Yeah. So the Netziv writes as follows. Rivka never was comfortable with Yitzchak. It's an unbelievable Netziv. Rivka never had the same kind of relationship with Yitzchak. And the Netziv says that was a Kadosh Baruch Hu's plan, so that the Esav and Yaakov thing would happen. Right? And he says, Rivka, why did she cover herself? She was intimidated of him when she met him, and it never went away. And that's why you never find them interacting in the Torah. Peladik Netziv, very interesting Netziv. So I was saying this, I was learning this in my class, so one of the boys raised his hand, and he said to me as follows, he said, Rebbe, if only Rivka had texting. So I was like, what? He's like, no, like if only she had texting. I said, why? So he said, well, you know, when you have something difficult to say, like you don't say it in person, you text it. So he starts explaining, what's the thing, right? That he said, when you have something that you want to tell someone that's going to make the situation uncomfortable, so you text them, because if you say it in person, it's going to be awkward, and like you're going to feel uncomfortable, and they're going to get upset, so you text them, and then you can just close your phone, right? He says, and they told me, or you can do it over the GChat was big then. I don't think anyone even does GChat anymore. So, or you can do it in GChat, and then just press X. And then the conversation's done. So, right, it's an unbelievable thing. So this is the way the world looks at it today. That the way you get over these things is by just doing these not real communication skills. So I was thinking in my head, I was laughing, I was thinking in my head, I was like, oh my gosh, you're gonna have to be married one day. Oh boy. Right? So this is really where you see the difference between the Torah and the way things are today, right? The Torah tells us to be a friend means to really, really be related to someone. To really have a relationship with them, to talk to them, to be involved with them, to be open about everything with them, right? And this causes so many problems today in so many different relations, right? Because people, a lot of people come to me and talk about dating, old Talmidim, and it's like this concept of looking for perfection, looking for something that's right away good, looking for, and it's totally foreign to everything, right, that Yiddishkeit's about. There's a very incredible Ran, a comment of the Ran. The Ran discusses, where does Avram send his Eved to find a wife for Yitzchak? Where does he send? What does he say? He gives one rule. He can't go to the Benos Canaan, to the among the people living in Canaan, in Eretz Yisrael. He has to go back to where Avram came from. Right? So why? Why is that? You ever ask that question? Both, huh? So right, so the Ran talks about, right, but I mean not with Minhagim, because they were right, they were over the Avodah Zarah. They were idol worshippers where Avram came from. And in Canaan they were idol worshippers. Right? And Avram was this strange, weird guy that did everything differently. So why would he prefer the idol worshippers there to the idol worshippers here? So the Ran says an incredible thing. The Ran says Avram Avinu understood that in Canaan the society was corrupt and the people didn't have good midos. They weren't good people. He knew that you're not going to find an idol with Avodah Zarah. Everyone was an idol worshiper. But he wanted someone who had good midos, who was a kind person, even if they were only familiar with Avodah Zarah, because he knew that once you have that, everything else will work out. You can learn to work together. So the Ran is a Rishon, right? One of the great Rishonim. The Ran writes, that's why he picked that the midos, where he came from, were better midos. The people were better people. They had better character. And in Canaan, they didn't. So Avram Avinu was dafka looking to see, to find someone who was kind. That's what it was, right? Who was kind. Right? Can you imagine his daughter-in-law's resume, right? That's what Avram was looking for. So that's what the Torah tells us. That's what the Torah tells us a person is supposed to understand in the relationship. They're not supposed to look for this thing society says today. Not what Rabbi Akiva's students did. They're supposed to have v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, to look to really be related to someone. There was a very fascinating study that was done. They put people, it was done by social scientists. This is like 2-3 years ago. They did a study. They had a room full of paintings. They brought one group of people in and they told the people, you can pick any painting here. Take it for free. And if you want to switch later on, we'll let you switch. So the people would take a painting and they left. Then they took another group of people and they put them in the room and they said, you can pick any painting you want, but you can never switch. This is your final chance to make a choice. And they took it. So then they tested the masters. How satisfied are they with their choice? Who do you think was more satisfied?
The people that didn't have to commit.
The people that didn't have to commit. Opposite. Isn't that fascinating? The people that were not allowed to change the choice were much happier with their choices than the others. Right? Because we naturally commit to things when we allow ourselves. Right? When we know we're committed to something, we love it because that's what a human being is. It's when we constantly think that we can, like, we have like 1 foot out of it and we can get out of it, that's when we're not really happy, right? That's why the Stipler Gaon and many others, right? What's the most important thing to look for in a relationship is vatranos. What's vatranos? Someone who gives in. Someone who's, because when someone's like that, they're willing to commit to something. They're not always, you know, standing on ceremony. It was a woman who lived in my community, was a Holocaust survivor. She was, and ever see that documentary, A Life Apart, about Hasidim? It's a famous one, like from the 90s, whatever. It was a long time ago. She was actually in it. So, I when she was shitting shiva for her sisters, I had a number of long conversations with her. She used to always tell me, she said, you know, when we started out our lives, we didn't expect anything. We did things and we made them good. And this woman was such a happy woman. She was like the happiest woman in the world. And she always said, like, you people, your generation, are so dumb. Everything, you're always expecting things and expecting things. Someone who expects things is never happy. If you don't expect things and you work on them, you make them good, you're a very happy person. I tell you, this lady, she had children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren. A very happy woman. It's funny, I later, when I visited Eretz Yisrael a number of years ago, I saw her family's name. You know the Belzer Beis HaMikdash? The big Belzer building? So I saw her family's name at the entrance. I was like, so I found out they used to give like $1 million a year. So she lives in a 3-bedroom house. She lives in a 3-bedroom house, this lady. And her and her husband. Hey, you see, when you don't expect things, you're very happy, right? So that's what everything is teaching with regard to Sphere. So we find this also, we find this in Pirkei Avos we learn now. Pirkei Avos tells us, Kenei Lecha Chaver. Get for yourself. Kenei. What does Kenei mean? Purchase, acquire for yourself a friend. Isn't that an interesting thing to say? Kenei lecha chaver. Sounds like you have to like work for it, right? Why does it say kenei lecha chaver? Why not grab for yourself a friend, get for yourself a friend? Why purchase? We're put into it. So the Avos to Reb Nosson, which is the expansion on Pirkei Avos, tells us, you know why? Because the way you make a chaver, the Avos says, is by opening up to them, by sharing your inner thoughts with them. So the obvious, the wisdom of Chazal, by sharing your inner thoughts, which is difficult, that's a kinyan, you gotta work on that, right? And that's the way a person makes a chaver, because Chazal understood, right? It's only when that happens that you do that communication, right? Having that ability to communicate with somebody else, which doesn't happen anymore today because of all the crazy things we have, all the blocks of communication. That's the key. Anyone know Dr. Pelkovitz? Yes, yeah, so Dr. Pelkovitz is one of my. I have a very close relation with Dr. Pelkovitz. I took my master's program, and when I was in Smicho, I took pastoral counseling with him. So Dr. Pelkovitz told us once an incredible story that happened with him. All of his stories are always incredible. But he's from Great Neck, Dr. Pelkovitz. And there was a number of years ago a tragedy. And Great Neck was a young child who passed away from a terrible machala. So the whole community was involved in it. And he was there the day of the funeral. So he davens in the Young Israel of Great Neck. It's on, like, if you ever been to Great Neck, it's on Middle Neck Road. It's like the big main street there. So this is the end of the funeral and doing the Malav of the Mace. So the whole road got blocked. And everyone's walking out past. So this is a little bit like a block away from the shul. There was a tow truck that was on the way to do a job. And he gets there and he sees he can't get there. The guy's going crazy. So they're honking and screaming. The guy was ready to come out and start, like, you know, like beating people up. So Dr. Pelkovitz, you know, deals with people like that all day. So he walked over to the guy's window and he says, "Can I speak to you?" So he starts to talk to the guy, and he starts telling him, you know, there was a young child in the synagogue here. He starts describing what happened and the terrible tragedy. He said he watched as the blood slowly left the guy's face, and he watched as his pulse slow down. He says within 2 minutes, the guy got out of his truck, went to the middle of the road and started directing traffic around the funeral, right? So Dr. Pelkovitz used to tell us, when you talk to someone, when you communicate with them, you can do unbelievable things, right? You can literally change everything. That's why it's called bitachon, right? Bitachon and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Navi describes the relationship between a husband and wife. Because the same leap of faith you have to take in a relationship of of learning to communicate with someone, putting yourself out there, taking risk is the same kind of itself in a person that's having a Kadosh Baruch Hu. The same kind of risk you take to believe in him and do what he wants from you, even when it's difficult. That's why one of the brachos we say under the chuppah, one of the Sheva brachos, is Sameach tesamach re'em ahuvim, rejoice, beloved friends, kesameichecha yetzircha began Eden mikedem. What does that mean? As your maker made you rejoice in Gan Eden. Interesting, right? As your maker made you rejoice in Gan Eden. So there's a sefer, the Hafla. It's one of the great Hasidic masters. This is the rabbi of Frankfurt in Germany in the 1700s. So the Hafla writes, what does the bracha mean? So the Hafla says, what happened with Adam and Chava? Adam and Chava, originally when they were created, were one. Then a Kadosh Baruch Hu separated them. Then what happened? When they were put together again, they had to learn to become like one again. Right? But for them, it was very easy. For them, it was very easy because they really came from one. So the Hafla says the bracha we're giving the Chasan and Kala is just like Adam and Chava came really from one and knew how to be one. You too should have that same joy. You should be able to find that same joy by becoming one, by learning how to be one, right? The same kind of thing, to be able to have that concept of friendship and relationship that people can really be together. But there's another very important part about being someone that has a good relationship, being someone that's able to have a friend and be a friend, and that's being yourself. Right? A relationship and friendships are not made out of two halves, it's made out of two wholes. So in fact, I find Rabbi Akiva says something very incredible. Rabbi Akiva himself, the man who says, "V'hafta reach kamocha," the man who's constantly sacrificing for everyone else, wants everyone to be together. So Rabbi Akiva is found in a fascinating discussion in the Gemara about the following case. It's the case of the Mahalich Bamidbar, it's called, the person walking in the desert. You have two people, the Gemara says, walking in the desert, and they have one flask of water. And it's not enough for both of them to live. Who gets the water? One guy has the water, the other guy doesn't have the water. One flask. Do they split it? Does he give it to his friends? What do you think? What's the halacha? Huh? What is that? Oh, so that's the Gemara. So Rabbi Akiva is the one that says, okay, so it's a machlokas. One opinion says they have to split it. And Rabbi Akiva says, no, he gets all of it. Chayecha kodman. Right, so Rabbi Akiva comes out of the Gemara seeming very mean. Everyone else says to give it. And Rabbi Akiva says, no, chayecha kodman. Your life comes first. And you get to keep the water. It's a fascinating. Rabbi Akiva, the man that said, v'hafta l'rach kamocha is the most important thing in the Torah. He says, near not kamocha, you come first. What does that mean? Why would Rabbi Akiva say that? Right? So the Sifrei Musar explain, because Rabbi Akiva understood that to be a good friend means you also have to be a complete person yourself. You can't be someone that's constantly just a shmata. You have to be somebody also that's able to be yourself, to be able to see yourself as someone who's important, to be able to have confidence. Right? We find that that's really the original chait that the world had. Right? So who was the first person to sin? It was Adam and Chava. So what happens at the end of the, after they sin? HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes down to Gan Eden, and what does he say? It says, Ayeka comes down. What does that mean, Ayeka? Where are you? So that is literally the strangest word in the entire Torah. Right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who sees everything, comes down and says, where are you? So Rav Kook says, it's not what he was saying. He wasn't saying, where are you? He was saying, where are you? Not where are you? Where are you? I created you as someone who is connected with me, who is an independent individual. And now you go and listen to other people. You listen to the Nachash, right? You used to be one with me. That's who you are. You are that person. Where are you that you became this person that listens to the outside, right? And that's the thing that Rav Kook writes happens throughout. That's the thing that leads to all sin. When the Jewish people, when an individual starts listening to all the voices on the outside, what society tells them, the pressures they have in it, rather than listening to themselves, to the internal voice that they have, that's when everything bad begins to occur. When I was in seventh grade, one of my rabbeim was trying to convince us, that's when instant messaging was starting on AOL. So we were all on. So Rabbeim was trying to tell us like to stay away from everything, so we didn't listen to him. But he would always tell us, like, always bring in things to show us. So one time he brought in one thing I never forgot. So he brought in, there's a big record label called BMG, not the one in Lakewood. A big record label called BMG. They make, it's like one of the biggest ones in the country. So they had a full page ad in the New York Times. It showed a guy's bald head, and the back of his bald head, and it showed him with headphones on, zoomed in, full page in New York Times, and then it said in big words, "Once you have them by the ears, their hearts and minds will follow." Once you have them by the ears, their hearts and minds will follow. Meaning, we will control you through our music, right? So, I mean, my Rebbe said to us, says, this is what they're trying to do to you. Right? And that's what Cook says about Ayeka. That's the whole point. When society, and this is all the more true today, right? That this is, right? I spoke to a very well-known Hasidic Rebbe in Borough Park one time. He was visiting my community in Bell Harbor for the summer. And he said to me, I was talking about the problems we have in my school, whatever, with different guys. He says, you think you have problems? Started telling me, he said the main thing you have to do with the young people today, they should have a machshuva. They should be able to think a little bit. So they don't have any sense of who they are. They have no sense of self. And that's what goes on in the world, right? Because we get lost. That's the ayeka. When people look on pictures on social media, right, everyone thinks that person's family is perfect and that person's kid is always quiet and is always sitting perfectly and that person's life is so exciting because look at all the great pictures they have from their vacation, right? I have girls in one of my classes, one of my girls was constantly on Snapchat looking at other people and said, I have such a boring life. Everyone has such a, I have such a boring life. I have nothing good to post, right? Because that's what it became. No one can be themselves. It's very fascinating that there is the Gemara talks about, there's a bracha you make upon seeing 600,000 Jews. You ever hear this? It's a bracha you make upon seeing 600,000 Jews. What's the bracha? You don't know? You see 600,000 Jews. Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam, Chacham Harazim, the wise one of secrets. Blessed are you, Hashem, the wise one of secrets. So everyone talks about how is that even possible to see 600,000 people at once? But that's a separate question. So why do you make that bracha? So you know what the Gemara says? You thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he's so incredible that there's 600,000 people there and no one is alike. Every single person is different than the other one. They all look different. They all have different feelings. They have different pasts. They have different values and desires, right? And you thank Kadosh Baruch Hu for the individuality. It's an unbelievable thing. That's why Avram, the Sifrei Chassidus say, Avram was called Avram HaIvri, Avram the Hebrew. So the Sifrei Chassidus say, Ivri also means me'aver, different, on the other side. That what made Avram great is he was willing to be different. He was willing to be the one that did things his own way because he knew it was the right thing to do. Apple used to have an ad they had in all the papers when I was growing up, and it had a picture of like some famous person like Einstein, and then it said at the bottom, think different. That was the ad. That's how Apple made them. So it's like, we're like the weird company. We do things totally different. And they made all the money because of that, right? So that's what it takes. Rabbi Akiva is saying, Chayecha Kodman. A person has to be who they are, or else they won't be able to be a good friend. They won't be able to be a real person. Who do you think the first rabbi to discuss cosmetic surgery was in Halacha? First rabbi. Discuss what? So it was Rav Moshe Feinstein. Moshe Feinstein was the first person to be addressed the question, is a Jew allowed to have plastic surgery? Right, so today you wouldn't even think it's a Shaila. But he was, and those people wondered, why? Because you're allowing yourself to be cut and injured and whatever, even though it's for a good purpose that you think is good, but it's a Shaila. It's a very famous discussion. Moshe Feinstein is a famous Jew about it, and the Tzitz Eliezer is all famous. So Moshe Feinstein was famously makil that it's allowed, and that's what everyone holds it. So there is a tshuva that was written in response, another opinion, by the Tzitz Eliezer. You heard of the Tzitz Eliezer? Tzitz Eliezer is one of the greatest rabbis to live in the last century. Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg. He was a Rav in Yerushalayim, was a prolific author, wrote, thousands upon thousands of Shailos Tshuvos, of responsa, of answers to the big halachic questions. There's a number of very famous ones, and he was the posek of Shari Tzedek Hospital. You know Shari Tzedek in Yerushalayim? When Shari Tzedek started having all these big questions, all the from doctors there, you know, everything from how to get the nurses on Shabbos to work, to all the crazy surgeries that they had to do, whether they're permitted separating Siamese twins, like, you know, the really, really crazy ones. Tzitz Eliezer is a famous tshuva. He wrote about plastic surgery. And Tzitz Eliezer discusses there of Moshe's head, and he says the following at the end of his tshuva. He says, in any event what the halacha is, Tzitz Eliezer writes, why would it be, it's fascinating to see how he wrote in those days, why would it be that a person should feel that they cannot be who they are? Right? Unbelievable thing. Why would it be that a person should feel that they can't be the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu created them? He says part of the parts of Emunah is believing when HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates a person, creates them in the perfect way for them. Right? Amazing to see Tzitzel Yehuda's right. And he says, aside from the halachic discussion, and he says, Moshe might be right about, but he makes that point at the end. Right? Fascinating thing that for a person to be themselves, right, is something that's extremely, extremely important. That's the real meaning of being Sameach Bechelko. Sameach Chelko, being happy with what you have, means being happy with yourself, being happy, feeling rich in who you are. You know, you have Yosef Mendelevich? Yosef Mendelevich is one of the famous Soviet prisoners who was in the Gulag, in the Soviet prisons for many, many, many years. He wrote a whole book about it. He's a frum Jew today, lives in Israel. So one of the stories he always recounts is that when he was in the Gulag, when he was in the Soviet prison, you weren't allowed to obviously have anything Jewish, so he used to cut out circles from his prison uniform and put it on his head as a yarmulke. And every time the guards would find, they'd take it off and they'd beat him up. And then he'd cut another piece out and he'd put it on. And they said it came to the point where he was like walking around with all holes all over his clothes. He says, one time, they stopped doing it. They stopped. They let him have it on. So he heard the guards talking and they said, Mendelevich is free already. He's free already. Right? Because, and so Yosef Mendelevich would say, even when you're a prisoner, if you have simcha with what you have, with who you are, with your identity, that's the real ticket to freedom. That's Chayecha Kodman. We find that all through this period of Pesach Teshuvos, the whole theme of Pesach Teshuvos is this message of learning how to relate to somebody else. One of the halachos of the Korban Pesach, the Torah says, it has to be eaten with Shcheino HaKarov Elav, with your neighbor who's close to you. And that's a halacha. The Gemara says, you're not allowed to say, I want to go eat with my friend, or my buddy, or my chevra over there. You have to eat with your shachin, with your neighbor. Right? So the Sifrei Chassidus 16, why is there such a halacha by the Korban Pesach? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew after the Jews left Egypt, they didn't have a concept of slaves of actively caring for somebody else. Because a slave has a constant thing about surviving. So in the first halacha they were given of the Pesach sacrifice, the Korban Pesach, they were told to go make friends with people. Right? Just there, because they needed that more than anything at that time. We find that the Pesach is eaten b'chabura, in a group, right? Because of the fact that you need to have togetherness, right? And the Kaddish Baruch Hu had to teach them that at the beginning. And on Shavuos, when we celebrate Kabbalah Satorah, the famous question everyone asks is that Chazal tell us that Kabbalah Satorah is every day. The Torah is given every day anew. So why do we have one day to celebrate? So the Vision Tzur Rebbe used to say, we're not celebrating the giving of the Torah, we're celebrating the unity of Kabbalah Satorah. What happened? The Torah says, Vayichan Sham Neged Ahar. They camped there next to the mountain. Vayichan is in singular. So why is it not in plural? Vayachanu. So Rashi famously tells us, Ki Ishachar Beleivacha. They were there as one person. Right, so the Vision Tzur says we celebrate on Shavuos the togetherness of the Jewish people. That's what it means, Pesach to Shavuos. It's about learning that whole message, inculcating that message of learning how to be a friend. Right, so how can we just take and encapsulate friendship all in, let's say, one bubble at the end? Right, so we know that the communication is very important. And we know that it's important for a person to be themselves. And we know that it's important for a person to really commit to somebody and to care about them actively in order to create a friendship. So what's a few places we could find that kind of message? So I'll tell you a very fascinating Medrash. The Medrash tells us about Aaron. So Pirkei Avos describes Aaron, says he's a Ohev Shalom V'Rodev Shalom. He loves peace and chases after peace. What does that mean? What does that mean? So the Medrash gives an example. Fascinating Medrash. The Medrash says, what would happen? Husband and wife would have a fight. And the husband would take a neder, a vow. What would the vow be? I will not speak to you again until you spit in the eye of the Kohen Gadol. This is what it says in the Medrash. He would take, what's that a way of saying? That means that halachically, if you take such a vow in those days, they literally would not be allowed to talk until she would spit in the Kohen Gadol's eye. That was his way of saying, I'm never talking to you again. Right? Medrash says in the Medrash. So Aaron HaKohen, Aaron would hear, the Medrash says, and what would he do? This is what I'm making this up. He would go over to the woman, and he would say, excuse me, ma'am, I have an eye infection. And the doctor told me, promise what it says in the Medrash, the doctor told me that your spit will cure my eye infection. Please spit in my eye. And she would look at him and say, no, please. Hey, Aaron HaKohen. So the Medrash says that's what it means, Oyv Shalom Ro Dev Shalom. Aaron so wanted people to be together. He was so committed to every person. He didn't care about himself in his own kavod. That was his kavod. That was his honor to be able to do that. There's an incredible story about that Rav Shlomo Karlbach used to tell. Shlomo Karlbach used to tell a story that he was once walking in Tel Aviv and he met an old street cleaner. And he started, so, you know, everyone passes the street cleaner to Shlomo Karlbach, talk to the street cleaners. So he's talking to the street cleaner. And his street cleaner turned out was a survivor from Poland. So he said, he went from Poland. So the man says he's from Piazetz. So it's Piazetz. So there was a very great rabbi in Poland, the Piazetzny Rebbe, who now is very, very famous. He started publishing all of his svarim. He was known as the Eish Kodesh. He was a very young man still in Europe. He was killed in his 40s. He was a prolific author. So he became one of the big rabbis in the Warsaw Ghetto. Became famous as the person that really held the Jewish people together in the Warsaw Ghetto. But before that, he had a yeshiva of children. Shlomo said, friend, did you know the Piazetzny? He said, I was in the Piazetzny's yeshiva as a boy. Shlomo was like unbelievably amazed. He says, you have to tell me something the Piazetzny said. So the man said, you know, after all this time, it's hard for me to remember anything. He says, you have to remember something. So he said, the man went over to they were on the Yarkon, by the beach. He went over to the water and washed his hands before staying over from the Piazetzner. And he said to Rav Shlomo, he says, there's one thing I remember. Every single Shabbos, between the courses at the Shabbos meal, the Piazetzner would say as follows, Kinderlach gedenkt, children remember, de greste zach in de welt is tin jenem atoiva. The greatest thing in the world is to do somebody else a good thing, a favor. Because he would say this every single Shabbos. And he says, I want to tell you something. When I was in the war, and I was in the camps, and I would look around at night, I felt total despair. And then I would remember what the Piazetzner said. And I would go over to the people in the barracks, and I would ask them to tell me about their family. I would do them a favor, and they'd be so happy to talk about their family. And he said, and a few months later, I'd feel the same anger again, and upset, and despair, and I would do it again. He says, now I left the war, and I'm here in Tel Aviv, but I have no one. I have no one left who's my family. He says, you know how many favors you can do as a street cleaner? Being a street cleaner keeps me alive. Right? So that's what it means to be committed, to be a friend. Right? That's what Rabbi Akiva was talking about. Realizing that we are as people, people who commit. We are as people, people that are able to make friends, that are able to commit to somebody. You know, being a good friend, it's not just good for the people you're friends with. The final message is, it makes you a better Jew. How does it make you a better Jew? So, Chazal tells us in Pirkei Avos, Ezehu mechubad, who is honored? What is it? Hamchavir es habrio, somebody that honors others. So then the Pirkei Avos brings a pasuk to prove it. What's the pasuk? I don't know, it's a hard one. The pasuk is, Ve'es mechubadai achabed. Those that honor me, says Hashem, I will honor them. The pasuk is, Hashem says, those that honor me, I will honor. So how does that prove? Right? The pasuk says, Hashem says, those that honor me, God, I will honor them. And Chazal say, that's what proves that someone who honors others, they are an honorable person. So everyone has the same question. The pasuk proves that if you honor God, you're honored. Not if you honor others, you're honored. The Chaim Volozhin writes in his commentary to Pirkei Avos as follows. A Jew doesn't honor another Jew because of who they are. A Jew is not friends with another Jew because of them. They're friends with them and they honor them because they know they are a child of HaKadosh Baruch Hu just like them. They feel close to them because they know they both are from the same being. The honor is not a personal thing, a selfish thing. It's about honoring the creations of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When a person's a friend to somebody, when a person learns how to really honor others, to have a relationship with someone, they learn how to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What does Hillel tell the ger? What does Hillel tell the ger who comes to him to convert? The ger comes and says, convert me al regal achas, on one leg. What does Hillel tell him? You know the Gemara, huh? So he doesn't say v'af l'rech kamocha. They tell us that in school. Because they don't want to tell us. He just says something in Aramaic. Da'alach sani l'chavrech lo sa'avid. What is hated upon your friend, do not do. It's different than v'af l'rech kamocha, right? I was also told that in school. What is hated upon, so how is that? And then Hillel says, Vahashar Perish, the rest is a commentary, Zil Gamor, go learn it. So Rashi writes there, you know who the friend is? Not another person. it's Hashem. And he quotes a pasuk that Hashem is called a chaver. But Hillel was saying to him, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is your friend. It's not a Hasidish prayer. It's a Rashi says on the Gemara. Hillel was saying to this person, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is your friend. If you learn how to be a friend, you will know how to be a Jew. You will know how to honor HaKadosh Baruch Hu and do what it is He loves, because you realize that Hashem is your friend, right? So this is the essence of being a friend. Friendship that Rabbi Akiva was trying to teach his Talmidim was not just about to have a social thing, right? That you can get on social media. It wasn't just about having a million people following you, because you could do that on social media. It was about learning how to really commit to someone, to learn how to be related to someone, to be in a real relationship with another individual, to learn how enriching it is to have those few people around you that really make your life meaningful, even if it's one, two people. It doesn't need to be the 5,000. That's something that really makes a person feel that there's something in the world. It's being able to honor others because you recognize they're HaKadosh Baruch Hu's children. By honoring others, recognizing that you too honor HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So recognizing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the end is your ultimate friend. The one you're ultimately related to. The one you're committed to. The one that knows all your secrets. The one that's a Chacham HaRazim and makes you a special individual in the world. That's what the sphere is about. That's what Rabbi Akiva was telling us, to learn the balance between V'hafta Reach Kamocha V'chayecha Kodman. To learn how to love others and to learn how to love yourself and to learn that somewhere in the middle is found the love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So I hope you all have a more meaningful sphere after this. So good night.